Okay. Hello and welcome to our case study call for the Nutritional Endocrinology Practitioner Training. This is our case study for the month of October. And today we have two cases that we're going to go over. One's from Michelle and one's from Deborah. So we're going to start with Michelle's and I'm going to share it on the screen momentarily. And there we go. All right. So Michelle, you're unmuted. So let's go ahead and get started. So Michelle submitted a case, and I would love for you to tell us about it. I have it on the screen so people can see, but I'd love for you to just share the person, you know, and do it in the way of, you know, X single, what is this, female, 125-pound female, blah, 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 presents with. That way we get used to doing it in that format. So go ahead.
Okay, 46-year-old female, 5'6", 125 pounds, educator, presenting with symptoms of gas, bloating, discomfort after eating anything, and stool that has a tendency of being greasy looking whenever increasing essential fatty acids.
Mm. Okay.
And based on that, as well as a history of having the majority of the colon removed at birth and a history of gastrointestinal imbalances, as well as chronic yeast that has gone through several rounds of quote-unquote treatment with various types of herbals and essential oils and things of that nature, and just reoccurring.
Okay. Wow. So tell us more about this removal of the large intestine at birth. That's a key piece.
Yeah.
What happened? What was going on then?
Born with Hirschsprung's disease, where there was no bowel movement for the first 24 hours. Upon investigation, it was found that the colon was diseased. So the colon was removed. For the first year, she lived with a colostomy bag. And then the remaining colon was reattached to the rectum at 1 year of age.
Wow. So two surgeries first, you know, it's very invasive, and two surgeries within that year of life.
Mm-hmm.
Which means, you know, for what little is left, just she's also got some issues with, there's probably lots of antibiotics and medication.
Exactly.
And all that in that year, right? Holy cow.
And then upon looking at the results from the stool test, I inquired a little bit further and found that there was also surgery that was done in Nigeria about 25 years ago.
Mm.
And at that time, there was infection and a tremendous amount of antibiotics were taken at that time.
Wow. So she had another surgery. What was the other surgery for?
There was abdominal pain. Yeah. And she was told that it was probable appendicitis, only to find out later on from her mother that she didn't have an appendix. And so the surgery turned out to be a hoax.
Oh,
so the wonderful drama of traveling abroad.
Oh, my God. So they told her it was appendicitis even after they opened her up. It wasn't just like they assumed it was appendicitis, didn't know her history.
Well, they told her that it was appendicitis. And then afterwards, they told her that they had removed the appendix.
Oh, my God. Oh, how horrible.
Yeah.
Poor thing. Okay. Meanwhile, so, she had the appendix was part of what was removed at birth.
Yes.
Oh.
So throughout her teenage years and all of her life, actually, just a lot of abdominal issues, always having a bloated abdomen, especially yeah. around cycle. And that just became the norm. She
yeah.
never knew anything different, never realized that that wasn't normal.
Wow.
And so even though she has a very small frame, especially during her cycle. There, she looks very distended and pregnant. And whenever she gets pregnant, she looks about 8 months pregnant when she's only 1 month.
Wow.
So the abdominal dysbiosis has been something that's been chronic all of her life.
Yeah.
And she also had testing done with the salivary hormones and with the cycle mapping, and was determined that one of the major issues that she was dealing with was detoxification of the pathways where she was recycling her estrogens. Mm-hmm. And that's been a major concern, especially with breast cancer in the family. Mm-hmm. So we've done foundational support with things like Clearvite for the liver support, as well as things like dandelion and milk thistle and things mm-hmm. of that nature on the food level. Mm-hmm. With the concern about essential fatty acids, we increased chia and flax and essential fatty acid oils because there's a concern for not really absorbing nutrients.
Yeah.
And previous blood panels have always shown imbalances in B vitamins as well as iron, very low ferritin, like a 2. And because of just not being able to digest things properly, we tend to do a lot of the supplementation through liquid and food. Yeah. And drinks and things of that nature.
Topical as well?
Yes, topical as well, like OxyCell.
Yep.
For inflammation. However, with the introduction of more essential fatty acids, such as the chia and the flax and the liquid essential fatty acids and vitamin D and things of that nature, we notice more greasy stools. And so it's just not being absorbed. It's not being broken down.
Right, right.
Wow. So that's between that and the chronic yeast infections, those are my motivations for getting the testing done.
Absolutely. So when you say chronic yeast infections, you mean vaginal yeast infections?
Well, yeast, a combination of things. If she eats anything that is sugary, yeah, immediately she'll start itching.
Okay.
And even with sticking to a very clean diet around her cycle, there's a lot of bloating and gas and tenderness.
Yeah.
And if she eats anything significantly off of her regimented diet, she'll start to have the additional symptomology of itching and discharge.
Great. And how is her diet? Well, first of all, I want to know what her diet is now, but I really want to know, in addition to this whole surgery thing and how she was born, what was her diet like as a kid? Was she, you know, standard American, or was she?
Standard American diet, crap.
Yeah, diet.
lots of dessert.
Like, born to a mom that had some education and could do.
And now lots of O. Henry bars and yeah, family that loves making pastry and ice cream and all that kind of good stuff.
Good. So tell us what. So when you first started seeing her, was she already on a better diet, or had?
Yes, the diet changed when she was 18 because she had horrible cycles to the point where they kept on having to put her on prescription Motrin, which was consistently increased. And then it got to a point where the doctor was recommending birth control pills, but the mother said no.
Mm.
And so they started to seek alternatives. That's when they got with an organization and they changed their diet, became vegetarians, and radically modified their eating habits. However, as you know, with a lot of vegetarians, they tend to be carb heavy,
gluten heavy. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's been, I would say, about 25 years of being vegan for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
But a heavy emphasis on, you know, whole grains and things of that nature, which we were learning was quote unquote good food, but not necessarily good for us.
Especially not with this kind of digestive.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So mm-hmm. more recently in the past year, there has been a significant shift to eating a lot less carbohydrates, no refined foods except, you know, an occasional snacking, cutting out the breads, even cutting down on things like potatoes that are easier to convert.
Mm-hmm.
Also, with the blood test, she had a A1C of 5.4, which is 10 for the insulin resistance. So again, that was incentive to modify the intake and the quality of the carbohydrates. And basically the diet at this point is very rich in things like leafy greens and carrots and celery and that type of, and tubers and things of that nature, sardines. Mm-hmm. Like I said, no soy, no dairy,
no gluten,
you know, just the occasional snack.
The occasional snack being what? What kind of occasional snack?
Like maybe once every 2 weeks, a bag of chips.
Okay. But, like a corn chip or a potato chip?
Yeah. Well, corn chip.
Okay.
But still, as I said, there's the tendency for triggering the yeast as soon as the slightest variation from a strict protocol will trigger the itching from the yeast almost immediately within an hour.
And did the stool test confirm it? We can look at that in a minute, but did the stool test confirm the yeast?
Stool test confirmed the yeast with the candida.
Yeah. Okay.
So it happened as many. But I had a question about that because it showed the candida as being just the plus one, but then in the box below that, it has it as many. So I was kind of confused.
Oh, microscopic yeast is the one below. So the top part is where they can identify the species.
Uh-huh.
And the other is microscopic yeast. It's like, you know, they see traces of yeast, but they can't identify it. That's what my interpretation of that is. So it can be a lot, but it's not culturable.
So with a plus one, saying that it's
bad, right? Anything is, you know, because it's going to show Candida albicans is actually a normal inhabitant, but if it's in the right proportion to the rest of it, it won't show up at all because they won't report it unless it becomes, so it's listed in the commensal column, right? We can go there in a second. Mm-hmm. I just want to clarify before we look at that though.
And then the other thing is that the stool is very liquidy simply because of having very little colon left.
Right.
And so it will fluctuate between, sometimes during the cycle, there's a almost quote unquote constipation, but not constipation where when you do have a elimination that it's hard, it's constipation where the bowels just lock up and refuse to release.
Really?
But when you do have a bowel movement, the fecal matter is moist. Mm-hmm. So it's not that it's been hardening or anything about
it. Right. Well, it has no place to be sitting. So, you know, to me, constipation in somebody who doesn't have a full length of a colon is not that the feces are sitting there being absorbed, you know, water being absorbed in the colon and you have a higher dryness. To me, that seems like it's at the valve. There's no valve, right? So it's stuck up higher. Probably it's not passing. So what do they reconstruct? I don't know much about how they do the surgery, but if they take away the ileocecal valve and the appendix.
They didn't reconstruct anything. It's just a stitch back to sew everything back together.
Okay. So it's pretty much it just flows as it flows, right? So.
Exactly. And cool. So my concern has been with the probability of SIBO because everything that's eaten, it's like everything is uncomfortable, you know? Yeah. And so we introduce a significant amount of digestive enzymes and she constantly has to have with practically everything, even smoothies. She has to have digestive enzymes or else there's a lot of discomfort.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, because there's a couple of things going on here, right? We have to think about this is where knowing the anatomy physiology comes in. If there's no valve there, then that would explain loose stool. I mean, it's just a flow, but that's going to increase the or decrease the absorptibility, because things don't just get to stay and hang out for a while, right? While they're being absorbed. Usually that ileocecal valve gets triggered to open as soon as some food hits the stomach. It's like, okay, warning, some more is coming, empty what's there. But she doesn't have that. So that gastroileal reflux, who knows what it does?
I think the ileocecal valve is still there, because I think they attached a little beyond the ileocecal valve. So not the entire large colon was removed.
Okay. But they took the appendix at that time just because?
Well, at that time, it was thought of as a preventative surgery.
Well, at birth, right? She had her colon removed, and they thought, well, as long as we're in here, we'll take away.
Exactly. That was the thinking of the day.
That is just, I mean, it's an MP word that I'm not going to say on that. I mean, okay. All right. So she does have an ileocecal. Well, that's good. That's at least there's.
Yeah. Because whenever she eats, she has to make sure that she's near a bathroom, because that usually triggers the need to have a bowel movement.
Okay. Yeah. Because it opens the valve, right? And then.
Yeah. And there's very little distance for it to travel at that point.
Do you know how long? Because it's supposed to be what, 20? No, it's supposed to be like.
I have no idea of how long, because, you know, it was done when she was an infant. So who knows?
Who knows, right? Right. Exactly. It's bigger now than it was then, probably. Okay. So, all right. So a couple of things that I want to point out from a learning perspective on this case, and then let's look at her stool test and anything else you can think of. So this poor girl has had like a horrendous impact on her gut, and we wouldn't expect her ever to have a normal gut. But what you want to do in this case is help her to have the most functional, the most effective gut. Very common when there's gut surgery, especially where parts a resection and then a sew back, where SIBO happens. There's oftentimes areas that they call blind loops, and there may even be that. We don't know without having to go in there and scope it. But there's often little pockets sometimes that get build up of bacteria, but it's very common for that to happen. So I just want you to know that SIBO is the right thinking. Even without thinking of symptoms, you got to start thinking SIBO when somebody has had surgery like this. Okay, so that's a good thought process. But we're looking at all the different ways that this woman now was impacted, and she has a big chunk of her colon removed. She has her appendix removed, and she has this chronic tendency to yeast and who knows what else. So we'll look at her stool test, lots of good ideas. She also has fat malabsorption, right? So the greasy stools, when increasing the amount of fat, is a problem. It usually means that there's fat. Do you know the color of her stools? Did she say?
Yes, ordinary, the good color, you know.
Like a dark.
Dark brown. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And when she has.
It also includes a lot of, you know, food particles, and that's why there's a tendency for more soups and broths and smoothies, just because no matter how much she chews, you can see it in the stool.
Yeah. Yeah. And the flax and chia, are they blended then? Are they whole flax?
They're soaked and blended.
Soaked and blended. Good. Perfect. Okay. So I was wondering if they get greasy, when you increase that on her, does the stool then have a lighter color? It's something to ask her, because.
No, it doesn't have a lighter color.
Doesn't have a lighter color. Okay.
So no, it's just that it's greasy and you can see the mark around the toilet.
Okay. All right. So,
but there's nothing that indicates, you know, like biliary stasis in terms of lightening color. No.
So I'm just thinking in terms of analyzing it, it may not be that the liver, gallbladder are having a problem. It could be a pancreatic thing.
Yeah, that's why we increase the digestive enzymes. But I was thinking of doing bile salts and pancreatic formulations, in addition to the digestive enzymes, whenever she's eating the
fats. I would be careful. And the reason I would be careful is because whenever you do the bile, people can tend to have a dumping syndrome where it increases the transit time. So when
we don't want that.
No.
The time is already very fast. That's a big concern that and then it increases the acidity, because I was looking at the stool test and the acidity of the stool, you know, was a 5.
Yeah.
So things are just going through too quickly already, but I didn't know how else to help the digestion of the fat.
One thing you might do is get some lipase. There are a couple of companies that sell individual just the lipase.
Mm-hmm.
And try this, and try mixing that, as long as you're blending up the chia flax anyway, is to add, open up a capsule of the lipase, add it to it, and let it sit. So, for example, if I were going to make a nut milk, we can make a nut milk, open up the lipase into it, put it in the fridge or leave it at room temperature, give it a half an hour to just work, and then drink it and see if that helps with the breakdown of those fats pre-digested when they go in. So more of it's going in as fatty acids already. And you might even, I don't know what it would taste like. This might be totally unpalatable, but a little bit of the bile salts and the lipase in there. So try it with just the lipase, see if that makes a difference.
Yeah, Apex has a liproprozyme that I was thinking of looking into.
Okay. Well, then you can open one of those up. Put it into the nut milk. You know, that's a good way to test it before you do it with the chia and flax. But just try it on a nut milk, or try it on whatever you've been doing with her. And then just see how that works.
Okay.
Digested. Now, again, it may make it taste so bad that you're not going to get compliance. So just try it on. You know, and it may be that a little stevia takes it away and it tastes fine. So just play with that. That's what I would do to start with that. I'd just be really careful with the bile salts. Unless she's willing to experiment and know that that's the risk, that do not be out of the house when you try this. And
so the bile salts are more if there was some type of biliary stasis then?
Yeah. And that's why I asked you about the steatorrhea. Steatorrhea is when the stools are pale. So that's why I asked about that, because that's
we don't have that
gallbladder. But since it is still dark black, the bile salts give it the pigment. So it sounds to me like there are bile salts in there.
Mm-hmm.
But that there's another reason it's not breaking down. It may be that it's going through too fast.
Mm-hmm.
Break it down.
How could we slow that down? Because I thought I was slowing it down by telling her to do the chia and the flax.
No.
a significant increase in salads and things of that nature with all that fiber, but it just keeps zipping through.
Yeah. That is a great approach to slowing things down. But, you know, given the situation of her gut. So I would try the pre-digested fats and, you know, make sure, with the flax and chia, you always soak them. So they are getting partially broken down. But then I would also put in the lipase or that particular supplement and just try it and see. And still, I would still make sure she's at home near the toilet when she's because you never know, right? You just, whenever you're experimenting with somebody with this particular type of a presentation, anytime you're doing something new, you want to make sure they're near the toilet.
Okay. So then my other concern is just mineral absorption, which just doesn't seem to be happening.
Yeah. So are you doing ionic minerals?
No, I had not considered that.
I would do ionic minerals, liquid ionic minerals, empty stomach first thing in the morning or last thing at night. And allow for, you know, you can allow for a half an hour before she eats, because those will get absorbed that way. You can get magnesium topically, so you can get the magnesium absorbed topically.
I have doing the magnesium and a little bit of iodine in a spray at night.
Okay, yeah, iodine pot topically you can do. So I would look at the others. If she does have signs of magnesium deficiency, then up it that way. And you can try.
What about the iron?
Right? I don't know there's no liposomal iron that I know of. You know what? How about a yellow dock tincture for the iron?
Okay.
That can work really well. So yellow dock tincture for the iron, right? Iodine, you've got topical. Magnesium, you've got topical. I don't know of any others that are topical. There might be. What others are liposomal?
So the yellow dock tincture is a topical?
Yellow drop tincture, you just can put it in her mouth and swish it around, and a lot of it will get absorbed under the tongue. But it's the extract of the yellow dock in a alcohol tincture. So it gets absorbed really quickly.
Okay.
Before it even hits, especially if you do it empty stomach, before it even hits the digestive tract, it doesn't have to compete.
Now, you'll notice that I also have the Trifala. When we're narrowing the cycle, because that's when she usually gets backed up.
Okay, so that's what I was going to say. Be careful of the Trifala because
it's always a balancing act, you know, so it goes from one extreme to the other. But yeah. Like I said, when she finally has a bowel movement at the end, it's not hard. So it's not a matter of, things being dried up. It's a motility issue.
Yeah, it's a motility issue, and you got to think about the prostaglandins that happen around the cycle, right? That whole
inflammatory cascade.
Inflammatory and spasmodic. So things tighten up, right? So that's the thing. I would also look at around that time when she's starting to get backed up, just do a lot of ileocecal valve massage and even the Mayan massage to help move things and get it open. Because my guess is that the valve is going into spasm.
What she usually does is a heating pad, and that helps to relieve everything.
That helps to relieve it. And castor oil packs.
Yep.
As far as the fat-soluble vitamins, I do them all in. The vitamins are easy. You can get liposomal in just about everything, or micellized. The D, the E, the A can all be gotten in K, even in micellized form. So they're going to be really.
What's micellized?
Micellized is like, it's just not quite as small particles, but it's small particles. Emulsified is, they're encapsulated. They're really small, not quite the liposomal where they're encapsulated in little fat globules and they go in through the chylomicrons. The micellized are broken down into tiny little particles. And so it's similar to liposomal, but not quite the same. I don't know, like chemically.
So is it topical or ingested?
They're ingested. Yeah. I mean, D, you probably can, I bet you can get D absorbed topically. You want to be going on the area of thin skin, right? So on the inner forearm kind of thing or back of the knee, but you might try any of the liquid vitamins and minerals you can try topically. I don't know of any studies or research on doing it that way, but I mean, D gets made in the skin, right? So what if you put it on, right?
And yeah, she takes long walks.
What's that?
She takes long walks in the sun.
That's good. Liposomal C is great. It's just expensive.
Yeah, I was looking at that. But then to balance that out, that I don't know if that's also triggering the acidity.
Yeah.
With the quick movement through the...
Well, yeah, and C will do that, right? If you're getting high dose therapeutic doses of C, it could trigger the increased bowel movements. I mean, it usually does it by increasing fluid. Mm-hmm. So, but the C, but let's see. If you get an account, I don't know if she's local to you, and you can buy the supplements and get it because it's a real big price thing, a dollar a gram for vitamin C. But Seeking Health is. A lot of liposomal nutrients. In fact, I just placed my order because I was almost out of my own, and I take a whole ton of liposomal stuff from them. And you can
Seeking
get a
Health.
Wholesale account. Seeking Health, yeah, you can get a wholesale account with them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Liposomal.
Yeah, but the liposomal can be a great thing. Also, they have liposomal curcumin. It also has resveratrol in it, but the liposomal curcumin could be a really good way to get some of the inflammation down around our period, especially.
Okay.
In the gut inflammation.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So this is a complicated case. So she's getting outside. She's exercising. She's got a lot of good habits. She's drinking greens a couple of times a week. So you said smoothies or juices or both?
Juices and smoothies.
Okay. Just a couple of times a week then?
Well, the smoothies are 2 to 3 times a week and the juicing is 3 times a week.
Okay, so she's pretty much doing it every day. And she's getting sleep 4 hours or more 4 times a week. So a lot of the time. Okay. All right, want to look at the stool. Is there anything else that we should know? And is there anything else? Let me just see if anybody else has any questions or comments about this so far. So if you think your cases have been complicated, this one kind of takes a big, oh, I love it. Lynn put in eating crap, carbs, refined sugars, artificial ingredients, processed foods. Very good. Did you just make it up? But they said caffeine and alcohol. She put in carbs, caffeine, whatever. Okay, cool. So Tony asked, if somebody's sensitive to alcohol, would you still recommend a yellow dock tincture? Are there alternatives? I mean, you could certainly get a glycerin tincture. They're not as effective in glycerin, so you really do need to, you just need to increase the amount if it's a glycerin. And when you say sensitive, do you mean like an alcoholic where if they have a little bit of the yellow dock tincture, they're going to finish the whole jar and get a whole bunch more, then yeah, just definitely keep them away. But if you mean sensitive to alcohol and that there's, you know, a negative reaction, I would say test it with them. You know, if their gut doesn't like it, if they drink wine, because it is small amounts and some people who are alcohol sensitive can't take it. Now, the other thing you can do with the yellow dock is you can get the whole yellow dock and make an infusion yourself. It's a root, so you'd have to do the decoction. So you'd have to cook it a while.
Could you also expose it to air for the alcohol to evaporate?
You know what? That I think is a myth that you can do that. Like if you do that, it'd have to be hot water. But this is just what David Winston taught me, you know, when I did my certification with him, is that he felt like, yeah, people say that and you can get a little bit of dissipation of the alcohol, but really you have to do it in a specific type of an oxygen-free chamber. I forget what he calls it, but he said it really isn't going to get a significant amount off. So if you're buying it from a company who knows how to do that and says, oh, this has been extracted with alcohol, but the alcohol has been removed, then that would be okay. And Lynn says you can make it with vinegar. And because it's just small amounts, alcohol and vinegar, of course, we know, and sugar of any kind, even glycerin, can aggravate the yeast. So you just have to be careful about that. But you can extract with vinegar. You'd have to look into it, how to do that and the amounts and all that. I'm not a master tincture maker.
Okay.
Okay, so yeah, it does. Okay, they say you feel woozy just with taking a few drops of, holy cow. Yeah, okay, that's great. I don't, I'm sensitive to alcohol in that I cannot sit down and drink a glass of wine without, you know, feeling it or wanting the whole bottle, but I can take my tinctures, so good. All right, so good. And with no other questions or comments, we're going to move to the stool test. All right, so this was the Great Plains. Oh, this is actually a doctor's data, but you ordered it through Great Plains. Oh, that's cool to know. You can order it through Great Plains because this is Great Plains, but this is definitely a doctor's data.
Yes, it's yeah, safe. I ordered it directly from Great Plains.
Oh, yeah, analyzed by doctor's data. Okay, cool. Do they allow direct to consumer at Great Plains?
No, they do not. Well, you can send the kits directly to the consumer.
Yeah.
But the consumer needs to have a signature from the practitioner.
Okay. So you ordered it for her and had it. Yeah. Okay. Got it. All right. Yeah. I'm just wondering because it is doctor's data was one of the ones that we couldn't get the account with where we could order them. So people are still ordering them through me. Okay. So she's got extremely low bifidus, no surprise, right? With that little of a colon.
Well, that was I have been giving her the probiotic, which has some bifidus in it.
Yeah, because it's absolutely not colonizing. Now, The others can grow in the small intestine, the lactobacillus, except for a couple of species. The others can all grow in the small intestine, right? So they can be moved along. The bifidus doesn't, so it's not getting down there. And maybe it just doesn't have enough space or real estate down there.
Hold on to,
right? So they reattached. I don't know. This is something to consider. I don't know if it would work or if she'd be squeamish about it. but you can try doing bifidus suppositories.
That's what I was going to do. I just got a mold, so I was gonna. I always try things out first.
Yes.
So I got a mold, and it looks like little bullets.
Yep.
And so I'm going to use that and see if I can figure out a good mixture to make sure that it doesn't melt before the insertion.
Yeah, I would try cocoa butter as opposed to coconut, because the thing with coconut butter in most of the place, especially wherever she's in Florida, it looks like, so she's near you. So if the very, very little time of year where coconut's going to be solid at room temperature, right?
Yeah, we keep it in the refrigerator.
Right, but who wants to stick a cold suppository up their butt, right? That's my thought process on it. Whereas the cocoa butter has a much higher melting point. So I keep my cocoa butter, little cubes of cocoa butter in my pantry all year long, and it never melts. So that's what I was thinking, is cocoa butter versus coconut butter. You melt it down in a double boiler or a dehydrator, and then put it in. You may have to let it cool down a little bit from there so you don't kill the organisms. Mm-hmm. But you can't let it cool down too much. So there's a timing factor. So yeah, it's a good idea to do it yourself, because I keep telling people how to do this, but I haven't actually done it. I have my suppository cases are sitting there for that same purpose. But to get the timing is a really good thing, right? You want to be able to give a client the exact amount of time and the amount that you would do. So you can experiment with that. And she makes an experiment, you know, you tell her you'll start with a certain amount, but then you can increase it. And she may notice that she feels better once she gets some of those bifidus in her large intestine.
Okay.
And it's possible, I don't know if you've looked at her genetics, but if she has any FUT2 gene, then it's going to be bifidus is going to have to be supplemented a lot all the time, because she just can't feed them.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then I noticed I was concerned about exactly what is this alpha strep and the high
Klebsiella.
Level of Klebsiella.
Yeah, the Klebsiella. So alpha hemolytic strep. Strep is actually an inhabitant. Whenever they're listed as commensal, they are usually considered a normal inhabitant until they overgrow. So she's got a serious bacterial overgrowth here. The candida is the small part of this. The alpha hemolytic strep and the Klebsiella. Now, a hemolytic strep is going to be, it's beta strep is what they test people for when they're pregnant to make sure that they don't pass it on to the baby vaginally. Alpha hemolytic strep is still a serious kind of strep. And a hemolytic strep means it can cause blood cells to burst. Right?
Oh, wow.
Looking at iron seriously, and look, you said her ferritin was 2.
Yes, very low.
It's overgrowth for a long time. That's what's causing it.
Ah.
Okay. So these guys got to go. So we don't know from here whether these guys are living in just the large intestine or just the small intestine. But my guess is that their Klebsiella is a common SIBO organism. I'm not sure about the alpha hemolytic strep, but it is common in SIBO to be growing in the small intestine. So this is like, it's not a confirmation that she has SIBO, but it's just increasing our odds that she does.
Okay.
So she's got the Klebsiella, she's got the alpha hemolytic strep. So those need to be addressed. And I'm sure they did a culture. So we'll see what they came up with in terms of what she's going to deal with. Light amount of candida. Those are normal candidas, the glabra, but they are, they're a little bit overgrown. That's why they show it. If they actually had a right amount, quote unquote, they wouldn't show it as a plus one.
So okay.
But there's microscopic. The result is many. So we expect us to see it. So it's, so it's there, but they're not able to actually, it's not something that they're able to actually culture because they're microscopic yeast. So she definitely has a yeast problem. She definitely has a bacterial problem. It doesn't look like she has a parasite problem at all, but there's many yeast. And see the sample too, they culture it long, that, you know, well, not necessarily they culture it longer, but she did 2 samples and the second one had many, whereas the first one had few. So that just reinforces why we should be getting multiple samples.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. I know somebody, another clinician who does this. It makes it harder for the person to do the test, but she'll do the triple. She'll get the three, the ovary and parasites times three, and then she'll have the person collect the stool from day one and day two, mix it together, and then put that in sample one, and then day two, three and four, and put it in sample two and five and six. That way she's getting a wider spread, mm-hmm. and you're more likely to catch something. Because something comes out completely negative on an ovary and parasite doesn't mean necessarily that they aren't there, especially if you, from a clinical perspective, you think they might. So that's something to keep in mind when you have these really persistent cases and you're like, oh, she had a stool test done a year ago. The doctor said no parasites, but you're really feeling like they are. You might want to do a test where you spread it out without having to pay more money to get more miles.
Okay.
So it's just a way to go. So she didn't have any of those really gross parasites, you know, the ones that they test for or any others. But her pancreatic elastase is 267, which shows good pancreatic function. Now, it may be showing that because of the supplementation. So keep that in mind, right? Doesn't mean, she doesn't need supplementation for pancreatic enzymes because she's already got them just fine. Few fats. So this was not, I'm assuming, a time when she had experimented with the extra fatty acids. No muscle fibers, vegetable fibers rare. That could be because she is blending it up, right? Most of the stuff. Carbohydrates negative. Okay. So there's definitely inflammation in this colon. Calprotectin and lysozyme. So we always want to be thinking, is there an inflammatory bowel disease here when we see these elevated? Now there's ranges. So some of the ranges are not, you haven't exceeded like the 59 out of the 50. That's not considered a range that you would expect to see for the, like an overt Crohn's or ulcerative colitis or something like that. It's low enough that it's within a margin of there's other inflammation. It could be just the leaky gut and just irritation from the overgrowths. So I'm not sure that I would really get all upset about that, but the lysozyme is high. Okay, I'm going to look in their back to see. They usually say what the range, I don't remember off the top of my head, what the range of lysozyme. I know the calprotectin is not considered dysbiotic flora. Okay, we can go back and talk about that. Cultured yeast, microscopic yeast, and they tell you about that there. Okay, here we go. Lysozyme. The level is elevated in the specimen. There's a study they quote, and I don't remember the number. I said, helpful in determining. Oh, usually yes.
That right there, moderate to high levels, greater than 2,000.
Okay, got it. Right. So she's still in that range of it's just slightly, comparatively speaking, with the for ulcerative colitis. So it's more likely that it's the inflammation we're just talking about. She's got gut inflammation. She's got a leaky gut. She's got this overgrowth of bacteria and yeast. So that's a good marker because you can see. Now, one of the things I would highly recommend is a tincture of Boswellia. I have seen phenomenal results in Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis. And there's tons of studies out there if you go and look for it, of bringing down the inflammation in the gut. So even though this is probably not an ulcerative colitis or Crohn's, it's going to help with the inflammation, and you can get it in a tincture form.
Is that, what's the other name for Boswellia?
Frankincense.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, and you can actually get it as an essential oil and do some topical as well. So rub it on, but I'd also think about if you can tolerate, or she can tolerate the tinctures, then I would get a tincture of Boswellia because it's the most rapid way to get it in.
Okay. What about using the a food grade frankincense internally?
Yep. That would be the same thing. I mean, tincture of Boswellia is a tincture of frankincense.
Okay.
Yeah. For some reason, the tinctures they call them Boswellia, and the oil they call frankincense, but they're the same thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then the SIGA is high.
It's high, right? She's fighting. She's obviously fighting stuff.
I mean, low. Sorry.
I mean, it's low, right? So she's depleted her SIGA, and my guess is she may have an FUT2. With the low bifidus and the low secretory IgA, that she's just not making enough.
So the genetics, probably?
Well, there's some genetic factors, right? There's a stress factor. I mean, having had surgery at birth, this poor girl's adrenals have been just really tested her whole life through, and then another surgery later, and just dealing with all this. So stress is a big depleter of secretory IgA. Vitamin A deficiency can lead to secretory IgA.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the stuff that you're given are already in the Triphala. The Amla is very good at helping to restore secretory IgA.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, making sure she's doing something, heart math, meditation, whatever.
Yeah, she does heart math and yoga. And
before
meditation.
Each meal, right? Before yeah. Any food goes in, right? And throughout the day. Good. Good. Yeah. So, I mean, it's very low. It's very low, which means that if you were to do, say, a stool test for gluten antibodies or any other antibodies, you couldn't trust it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because her total secretory IgA is low, so you're not going to get a good reading.
It'd be a false negative.
It'd be a false negative, absolutely. And that's what we find when we do a blood test, too. If somebody, you think, oh, my God, they have all these food allergies. We know it. They eat this food. They get this reaction. And then you run all these tests and nothing shows up. You run then a total immunoglobulin panel.
Okay.
And if that shows up as low, then you know. And if that shows up as normal, then you go, huh, maybe they don't have food allergies. Maybe it's something else, right? A histamine intolerance, a oxalate intolerance, whatever, all kinds of things, intolerance. And then she's got, interestingly enough, her butyrate is high. It's only a little bit high.
Which is that possibly from all the coconut oil?
Well, it could be. I mean, it could be from all the fiber too, right? So I'm not concerned about it being that high, but it's just because it's just a little high, but it might be, it could be bacteria in the small intestine. So that's why when we put somebody on like a FODMAP diet or taking away these wonderful fermentable carbohydrates that they need for their small large intestine and the butyrate and, you know, to colonize those cells. But you need that, the butyrate is good for building the healthy cells in the lining. So on the one hand, it's good, but on the other hand, it could be also the extra might be feeding the small intestine bacteria. So I wouldn't be supplementing butyrate personally. Like this,
is there any way to identify if there is an overgrowth in the small intestine besides the breath test and symptomology?
No, because I mean they can do an endoscopy, but that will only test the upper part, and usually, most likely, SIBO is going to happen in the jejunum.
Yeah,
and you can't scope it down far enough or up far enough. It's like just in the middle, right? So you can see the duodenum. On an endoscope, they can go up, down through the throat into the stomach, which they could see that, and they can see through a colonoscopy. Now, given, I don't know if they would actually want to do, now they wouldn't be able to pass the ileocecal valve. I was going to say, if she didn't have an intact ileocecal valve, they could probably do it with a colonoscopy because she doesn't have much of a large intestine, but I wouldn't. It's you run too much risk of perforation. Going in that way and into the small intestine. I think that what I would do, there's enough here to address that I would just address for 3-4 months and then go back and test it again.
Okay.
All right. Because first of all, this is what my objection to the SIBO breath test is. They tell you to eat like crap for a couple of days beforehand. They want you to eat fiber. They want you to eat just every, you know, bland stuff. And you look at that and go, I wouldn't tell somebody to eat that way. I mean, you're trying to get people under control and you're having them eat, you know, white rice and butter and lots of oil. And I mean, it's crazy. So I don't like the test. Plus you've got to get, it has to be an MD or maybe a naturopath as well in states where they're licensed. But I can't order that test because for some reason this kind of lactulose is considered a prescription drug. Weird. Anyway, so that's the other reason for it that I don't like it. You can do a glucose version of the test, but it's not necessarily as accurate. It's more accurate if it's in the upper part in the duodenum.
Now out of the herbals, which ones would you suggest from the chart?
Yeah, let's look at the chart. Round loose order. Okay. So, there's a couple of them. So a lot of times what I find is people who, you know, are more health conscious and they've been doing stuff. They look, and they've been taking stuff like, oh, let's take that over the counter, you know, parasite cleanse and let's do the berberine. And they end up being sensitive and a low sensitivity, resistant to it. So I see this a lot where people are resistant to the berberine. So this is for the Klebsiella, grapefruit seed extract, uva, ursi, silver, and oregano. You know, I would recommend a rotating plan. You're going to have to check for tolerance, right? So you can alternate oregano, uva, ursi, grapefruit seed extract, and silver. 5 days on one, and then 5 days on the next, and then 5 days on the next, and 5 days on the next. Because these guys are, they will adapt, and they'll adapt quickly. Okay. By the time 20 days rolls around, probably the original ones are gone and they haven't seen it yet, you know?
So what version of the, is that the colloidal silver?
That would be colloidal silver. Okay. I've used one, the sovereign version is one that I've used a few times. Mm-hmm. I've used it around for topical infections or for, you know, sore throat to gargle with, that kind of thing. And then grapefruit seed extract, again, you could do liquid.
The essential oil.
And oregano is easy. Uva ursi, you can get a tincture if the others. But I'm wondering, though, since we're going for, now it's small intestine, I'm wondering.
Will it even get all the way down there?
Yeah, well, we're I think it's going to really be working up higher is my feeling. Because I have a feeling a lot of that bacterial overgrowth is actually in the small intestine, not the large. So here's what I would do is I would generally treat this as if you've got a confirmed SIBO.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't mean like take every food in the world away and go on, you know, a super strict diet at the beginning. But I would start with.
Well, she's already there, so.
She's already there, right? So, what I meant was the FODMAPs and the SCD.
Yeah.
We have that chart that's in the digestive thing where I labeled them out.
She adheres to that most of the time.
She does. Okay, so she's already doing that. So you want to look at vagus nerve stimulation,
mm-hmm.
right? So all the things you know that Karazian talks about for vagus nerve and
the gargling and
yeah, just pick one. She doesn't have to do all of them, but pick one that's the least obnoxious. The meditation she's already doing, that calming down and getting into parasympathetic as often as possible. The spacing between meals.
Mm-hmm. She does intermittent fasting.
I would say for somebody like this where food is such an issue that I would say 1 to 2 meals a day is probably going to do way better than 3 meals a day.
Yeah. Just usually in the mornings, it's just the tea, the lemon tea.
Mm-hmm.
Because anything early is just not happy.
Yeah, that's what I would say, I would think. Yeah, so you can alternate these all and see how that goes. And then you want it, so it's the motility. And even though she has this diarrhea, I don't know that it means, yeah, I think the migrating motor thing is probably working. I think that the reason for the overgrowth in the small intestine is more the structural issues.
So given the structural parameter, is this something that'll probably be just lifelong?
Just what?
Lifelong.
Oh, yes. It's always going to be a struggle. It's always going to be a have to eat super clean, have to take time eating, chew really well, take, you know, probiotics. I would say a killing protocol I would probably do prophylactically every year. Right? Mm. Like a 3 month, 2 month, 1 month, whatever it works out to be that works. But I would say prophylactically, you know, as things move on, if their symptoms start to get worse and then do it again, but you got to find what works here,
mm-hmm.
what works to get rid of it. And then you need to, did they do a yeast one or not? Yeah, here's the yeast. Let me see what those are. Okay. So the uva ursi is good for the grapefruit seed are good. Undecillonic acid is in castor oil, right? It's castor bean oil. So the topical, but SF722 from Thorn is a good one.
What are plant tannins?
Plant tannins, there's something called, what's it called? Tannins are a particular chemical constituent in foods, but it's in black tea and stuff. But there's a specific one called virusin. I don't know why they call it virusin, but it's virusin. But they have another version of it that's Tanelbit is what they call their regular one, but it has dairy in it. But the virusin is the non-dairy form of it. And I've used that successfully with folks. So, and you've also got caprylic acid, which is now that's not that high. That's all that coconut.
But interestingly, it's susceptible to the berberine.
Okay. Yeah. So. Yeah. So if you're going to do that, so you can have her do the berberine, you know, either berberine itself. And I've seen some good liquid berberines. Emerson has a couple. I think it's that scent. It's the one. Oh, what's the name of the brand? It's the brand that Jane likes and uses some of their stuff for her liver cleanse. Essential, eclectic maybe. But anyway, it's a berberine. It's a high potency berberine extract from, you know, golden seal. Well, I don't think they do it from golden seal just because it's endangered. So they're more likely to do it from golden rod, Oregon grape, and some of the others. So now, I would say she could do that. I would still rotate. Uva ursi would be fine. I would still rotate. You might be able to take a yeast one and the bacterial one together, but I would still do the rotation just that. The other thing is biofilm. You may want to do some biofilm disruptors like for a week to 10 days before starting the killing.
Which ones do you recommend?
I like serrapeptidase. It's pretty straightforward. There's some formulations, but I like serrapeptidase. That's the one I use the most often. And I usually start that for a few days, like 3 to 5 days on just the serrapeptidase and then start doing the other stuff, but stay on the high dose of the serrapeptidase for about 10 days, and then you can start tapering that off.
Isabella brought up something that I had forgotten to ask you about. What about the E. coli?
Yeah, because the E. coli is not, so that it's just considered, oh, where's the E. coli? Not, it's the strep.
No, in the green column.
Yeah.
4+.
Oh, the green column is, this is expected.
Oh, so it's good there?
These are fine. These are fine. In the bacteria, because they're showing the normal stuff. In the yeast, they shouldn't show here, in my opinion.
Okay.
I mean, the E. coli could be an issue because of it's so out of balance with the bifidus, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't think we're going to address it. You don't want to try to kill off some of the beneficial flora. You want to crowd them out. Uh-huh. And that's where you're going to increase your bifidus.
Okay.
Okay. And I would stay away from a probiotic orally that's not a D-lactic acid free. So your general, Lactobacillus acidophilus, I wouldn't do that. Okay. But I would say the D-lactic acid free, Claire has it, and Custom Probiotic, those are the only two I know that have it. So no, the E. coli is not a concern there.
Okay.
All right.
And in terms of the, we were saying in terms of the mineral absorption to just try to do as much as we could through
liquids and topicals, the ionics and topical. Yep. Okay. Yep. Okay.
Okay.
And
okay.
Yeah. So even these antifungals are not very effective on this particular yeast. Statin is, but the potent stuff, which we don't want to even go to unless somebody's in dire straits. I would come up with a rotation plan. So if she's got a four-part rotation, mm-hmm. like the Uva Ursi goes for both. So you might be able to do, you know, berberine. Well, it's grapefruit seed extract goes for both.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So you could just add the undecylenic acid, the tannins, and the berberine into that, like she'll do both. Like she may do the grapefruit seed extract and berberine, for example.
And you said the undecylenic is from the castor oil bean?
Yeah, that's not even up there. So don't even, you could do it, but I would just do topical. It's from castor bean. They have it, SF722 is the one from, that I know of, that's the only one I've ever used, is from Thorn.
Okay.
You could add that in, but just try to, I'm sitting here going, I'm not going to go there. Just sit down with your paper and write them all out and figure out the order you want her to do them in.
Okay.
Okay. And start with one at a time with a sensitive person. You know, don't give her 2 on 1 days. And then just, I would start with 3 to 5 days in advance, do the serrapeptidase. And the if you're going to have her do the bifidus suppositories, that would be a good thing to do at the same time. Just get the serrapeptidase and do the bifidus from the bottom up.
Okay.
Okay.
Where would you get the bifidus from?
I like Custom Probiotics because even though it's $100 for the bottle, it's so potent. But Claire has bifidus only and a number. I think that Seeking Health also has a bifidus only.
How much would you put in for, say, a cup of the...
I don't know how, yes, I haven't calculated yet for how much per. So you're going to go up the bottom. So you're going to do suppositories. I would say you want to get to the point of putting up at least 100 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Right. 100 billion is, I don't know, it's like a speck on of the custom probiotic one. But I would want to be putting up 100 billion a day.
Okay.
Okay. With the least number of suppositories you can, right? You may try it and see, try it with just a pinch and try it yourself to make several of them just to see if you notice anything. Like if you notice that you're suddenly running to the bathroom from just a tiny bit, I'm not going to get her to do more than that, right?
Okay.
Okay.
All righty. Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you. Good case. Very challenging case. All right, I'm looking to see, and Isabel says she opened an account with Doctor's Data. That's awesome. Oh, you're not able to, right. Yeah, you're not able to, but you are able to with Great Plains. Great Plains is much more lenient. So, yeah, go ahead and open it up, and we should update our lab page, our lab resources page, to say that that's available. Cool. All right, so I am going to, did Deborah come on? Let me see, Deborah Bart. Where's my list? And I'm not on screen today because I just came back from a run and I'm a mess. So I got to go take a shower in a bit to make it to the airport. Michelle, Laura, Drina, Lynn, Melody, Susan, Tony, Valerie. I don't see Deborah. I wonder, I'm going to look to see if Deborah's is the same case she brought up on yesterday's call. So let's see. Did I bring up Deborah?
It looks a little bit like it.
It might be, yeah, because she brought it up yesterday. Okay, there we are. Deborah, female pilot. Yep, it was her. Yeah. Okay, so we talked about this on yesterday's call. Let's see if she's at anything else. Okay, we'll wait on that if she wants to go over it more. Now we have the case open. Anybody else? Questions? Comments? Top share. That was a great case, don't you think? Did you guys learn something from this case? Anybody want to say, Lynn? I mean, this is like
I did
one of the most severe cases we're ever going to see, right? I mean,
hopefully,
right? Where as a baby losing colon, that's right.
Just on So again, from an energetic level, that's your root cause. That's your root chakra. That's that's your whole, you know, your seed of where you are, who you are. And it's such, you know, from the beginning, it was violated.
Right. And exactly.
So having to deal with that trauma and shift it out.
Right. And I think, you know, it's good she's working with you, Michelle, because of your spiritual and you know the non-physical orientation as well as the physical. So you have amazing skills in both areas, and hopefully she's open to and taking advantage of that.
Well, what helped is that I recently got my upgrade with the Zyto Compass, and it's interesting that what came up for her was grief.
Mm.
A very
lung, large intestine, right?
Lung, mm-hmm, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. Well, good. She's in good hands. So, Tony said, thanks a lot. Yes, I agree that her background will serve her well. Anybody else? Or we'll just go. I'll just go catch a plane. And I'll see some of you next week. I'm so excited. Yay. Who are we seeing? Susan? Dorina, no, right? Tony, yes. Gonna see you next week. Here, I'll lose my vanity and I'll just open up my thing. I'm a mess. Yay. I'm gonna go take a shower. I just came back from a run and I'm all sweaty, but I guess you can't see my sweat. So I'm gonna see Susan. I'm gonna see Valerie. I'm gonna see Michelle. I'm gonna see Tony, and Laura can't make it. I'm sorry. And Melody can't make it. And Drina, I don't remember seeing you on the list. No, Drina, it was so nice to hang out with you last year. I hope maybe something will happen in the meantime and you can come. So we've got about, it looks like 17 that are going to be coming to my house the day after, which is a little less than last year. Last year we had like 27. And my house was completely turned around, but we fit everybody beautifully. It was wonderful. And, we had a great time, and it's going to be a great sharing, and it's Laura's going to be coming, and she's going to lead us in some, you know, amazing exercises there, and we're going to get everybody will have an opportunity to have a little hot seat, as we call them, love seat, as we call them, and whatever it is you want to be working on, you can be working on, and it's just a great time for us to get together, and we have somebody scheduled to come and make us food, so don't worry about food. We're going to get fed by somebody who is trained by me and Karen. So top notch, right? Somebody that's trained by me and Karen. So anyway, we'll see you guys soon, and have a great rest of the day, rest of the weekend, and we'll see you next week. Bye. Open up your lines and say goodbye. I love to hear your voices.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. Next week.
Bye. Bye.